drag myself to my feet.
But you knew that you should not release the one your kind call the sin-maker,
another one said, turning violent blue eyes on me, ones that reminded me of the color of Iz's wings in the sun.
And so you allowed him to trick you. We should punish Zaheer,
another one disagreed. This one had dark purple hair that looked almost black.
Bahadur's daughter does not need to die.
My father stayed silent, neither agreeing nor disagreeing. I had managed to get myself to standing now as they all looked on, sizing me up with their unnatural gazes.
A balance, then,
a red-eyed one said.
She should not die for Zaheer's crimes, but someone should.
There was a nod from around the assembled genie, and when the red-eyed genie looked at Bahadur, he too inclined his head just ever so slightly.
We are nothing if not just,
another genie with eyes as unnaturally white as a flame spoke.
You chose to release Zaheer from his prison. You can make this choice too.
A choice? I wasn't sure if it was a question, or if I was just repeating the word, but it came out a low, angry, breathless hiss. He might burn with an infinite number of the small sparks that burned in me, but just then I'd swear there was enough fire in me to set the both of us alight. The red-eyed genie didn't wave a hand, or say words like the market performers did, before revealing the grand ending to their great trick. But I felt it all the same, the shift in the air the moment before they appeared across from me. Side by side, staggering, fresh from the battlefield. Two brothers. Two princes. Ahmed and Jin.
A choice of which one will die.
Chapter 42. This would be a whole lot easier if I were still the same selfish girl you met in Dustwalk. I'd said that to Jin about another choice, on another day. Or maybe it was really about the same choice. Because I'd made this choice so many times before without knowing it. 100 small choices on the road that had led me to this one. This final choice, between what I wanted and what I ought to do, between myself and my country. When I'd chosen not to flee Fahali to save my own skin. When I'd chosen not to let Jin die in the desert after the nightmare bite. When I'd chosen to face down Norsham. When I'd chosen to let Shira die, and to let Hala die, and let Sam die. And when I'd chosen to free Zaheer. It was a choice between what I wanted to do and what I needed to do.
Amani,
Ahmed spoke, glancing around the vaults, confused.
What's happening?
But Jin never took his eyes off me.
It is your choice, daughter of Bahadur.
One of the genes said,
which one dies today, or don't choose, and they both die.
A faraway part of me knew I ought to beg and plead, to rail against fate and the whole world for bringing me here, against the gene who made humanity and then played with us like this, with their deals and their tricks that they called justice, who were taking more from me than I ever had from them. But I didn't rage or cry as I watched Ahmed's mouth forming the words I couldn't hear, as I saw Jin standing perfectly, impossibly still, eyes closed as the understanding of what was happening and the pain of it struck him. I was standing in the same stone vaults, but I was far away. Suddenly, I was standing in a crowded barn on the other side of the desert all over again. One bullet left, two bottles. Both. I needed both of them alive. But I couldn't cheat my way out of this one. It was an easy choice, really. Even if it was the hardest choice I'd ever have to make. Because I wasn't that selfish girl anymore. Ahmed was shouting something, I realized. I forced myself to focus on him, to hear him from somewhere far beyond the roaring in my mind. He was telling me to take Jin and get out. To let him die. Jin wasn't saying anything. He knew me. I didn't take my eyes off Jin as I spoke, and though my voice was barely more than a whisper, I heard it echo around the vaults. "Let Ahmed go," I said. Jin let out the breath he'd been holding, like it was a relief.
"No!"
Ahmed's voice ripped from his throat.
"Amani!"
He was on me, his hands tight around my arms.
"Don't do this. It's not worth it. There are other ways."
"Ahmed." His name came out more prayer than plea. "It's done." The tears were coming hard and fast now, streaking down my face. Ahmed looked shocked, his hands digging into my arms.
"But you love him,"
he said softly.
"You love him, and you should save him. That's what people do with those they love, Amani. They save them."
No, it wasn't. Sam had taught me that. Great love stories ended in death. All stories ended in death sooner or later. Ours was ending sooner. I could feel grief hammering at me now, like waves against a ship, like the sandstorm tearing at the walls of the camp. "I'm making the choice he would have made." The words wouldn't come anymore. "The choice we all made, that we would die for you."
"Ahmed."
Jin still couldn't move, but he found his voice.
"I would always have died protecting you. You must know that."
Ahmed's chest rose and fell, like he was trying to catch his breath. He moved over to Jin shakily. He placed a hand on Jin's shoulder.
"I would have died for you, brother. In a heartbeat." "I know,"
Jin said.
"But you're not going to."
And then he embraced him. They gripped each other like they were still young boys, like they could pour every bit of strength and life they had into each other.
"Go do something worth dying for,"
Jin said, releasing him. The red-eyed genie raised his arms. I saw the rising panic in Ahmed as he scrambled for everything he wanted to say to his brother.
"Jin."
He stepped forward urgently, just as the genie brought his arms down. And just like that, Ahmed was gone, air rushing in to fill the space where he'd been. Jin's shoulders sagged, the strength leaving him, everything he'd been holding on to for Ahmed's sake, fleeing him. His eyes landed on me. I closed the distance between us, Jin pulling me close to him as soon as I was within reach, until every single part of us was pressed together, and I felt whatever strength I had left leave me, too. "I'm sorry." The words came out a sob into his shirt as he tightened his arms around me. "I'm so sorry."
"I'm sorry, too."
He spoke into my hair, pressing his mouth close to my ear.
"I promised to teach you how to swim. I don't like breaking my promises."
The laugh that came out of me was short and ugly through the sobs, but I saw Jin smile as he tilted my head back up toward him, his thumbs wiping away the tears. He smiled faintly. I knew what he was thinking. I had some salt water in my soul, after all.
You should go, he said.
You shouldn't have to watch this. No! I'm not going to let you die alone. He pulled me suddenly, violently forward. There was no gentleness in that kiss. Nothing but desperation and anger and fear, knowing it was our last. I love you, I love you, I love you. I wasn't sure which one of us was saying which words, pressing them hard against each other's mouths in the last moment we had left. I could feel tears streaming down my face. I could taste blood. We were ripped apart, not by hands, but by air, by a power greater than us. And I was staring at him, suddenly dragged far away from me. I watched him through tears. A blade appeared out of nowhere. It wasn't made of iron, I realized. It was made of sand, a sharpened blade made from the desert itself. The genie holding it was Bahadur. My father gazed at me with ancient, pitiless eyes.
You don't have to watch this, daughter. We can send you far away.
I'm staying, I said, never taking my eyes off Jin, trying to drink him in until the very last second. Until the end. And then my father plunged the knife through Jin's stomach, driving it into the hilt, and I felt my own insides rip open. Chapter 43. I was bleeding. It was soaking through my shirt and onto my hands. My fingers were stained bright red, and somehow I'd fallen to my knees. I realized it all distantly, as if I was in a dream where everything was a little bit less clear. I wasn't just imagining the pain. My hands were wet with blood as I pulled them away from my stomach. I pushed my shirt up hurriedly. There was a slice in my side, exactly where the knife had gone into Jin. Exactly where my scar from the bullet in Ilyaz was. Like an old wound torn open. Except this one was brand new. The Jin were looking down at us curiously. Even after all this time, they seemed unable to tear their eyes away from us, from our pain, our anguish, all the experiences they hadn't known before we brought them into the world.
You married him,
one of the Jin said matter-of-factly. No. Except the denial wouldn't come. All that I am, I give to you, and all that I have is yours. We had never knelt side by side in front of fires with my face covered, but we had said the words, not in front of a holy father, but last night, tangled up in Jin's tent. Until the day we die. It was the words that mattered. I had tied our lives together when I said those words, when I made them truth, and I'd nodded our deaths, too.
Your daughters tend to lose their hearts very easily, Bahadur.
One of the Jin spoke to my father, a hint of mockery in his voice.
And their lives with them.
With those words, he was gone, blinking out of existence, already forgetting us as he vanished back to the desert. Another genie blinked out after him, and then my father after him, without so much as casting a glance back our way, and then another. One by one, they vanished from the vaults that had held them for so long against us. Until we were alone. Blood was pooling around me, warm on my fingers. My hands crawled away from it across the stone floor, feeling blindly. Something solid wrapped itself around my fingers. Jin had caught my hand. I clung to his. I lifted my body from the ground, screaming in pain, dragging myself the last few feet between us. I pressed my hand against my wound as I moved, until the side of my body was against his, our knotted hands trapped between us. I shifted so I could see his face. So this was how this story would end. The resurrected Prince Ahmed would win the war. When he took the palace, he would descend into the vaults again. And there he would find us twined together in blood on the stone floor. They would burn us. And maybe they'd even remember us. But it would be some distant, false, nameless version of us. The blue-eyed bandit and the foreign prince. Not Amani and Jin. The stories might tell that we loved each other, but the stories would never remember what that felt like. They would never know that when we lay together in his tent the night before we died, he traced the small scar along my collarbone. That when he kissed me, he smiled against my mouth. Or what it sounded like when he said my name. We contained our own stories. A thousand tiny parts of the story would die with us. The world was starting to fade away into unconsciousness. No, into death. I wanted to tell him I was sorry, but I was and I wasn't. I wanted to tell him I didn't want him to die, that I loved him, but he knew that. "What do you think happens?" I said instead. "When we die?" Jin didn't believe in gods. He didn't believe in heavens or hells or worlds after. Just in this world. Just in now. Jin traced my face like he was trying to remember it.
"I think they burn us, and we become dust and ash."
He ran a finger across the edge of my lips.
"And I think that the dust that was me will spend until the end of time trying to get as close as possible to the dust that was you out in that vast desert."
Something that was neither a sob nor a laugh came out of me, and Jin's fingers clamped around mine. I only had time to press back before the darkness came. Chapter 44. The Young Demji. Once at the dawn of a long-ago war, the First War, the immortal Jin created life. And alongside it, there was death. They gave their creations bodies that could be hurt and destroyed and scattered like sand, and then lit them with a single spark of genie fire that would one day extinguish. But among them, there were those who had a greater spark of fire than had been granted to most mortals. They were called Demji. Many said it was because they had more fire, that they burned so much brighter and quicker than most, that they all died so young. Princess Hawa took her last breath on a wall overlooking a battlefield. Ashra the Blessed took her last breath facing the Destroyer of Worlds when no one else would. Emin of a Thousand Faces' last breath came wearing the one face that death was truly seeking. Hala the Golden breathed in freedom one last time so that she would not have to take a thousand more breaths as a prisoner. And the blue-eyed bandit took her dying breath in the vaults below a city at war, clutching hands with the man she loved as the world faded away around them. And then, after her last breath, she took another one. Chapter 45. The dark cleared like a sudden burst of fire, and for a moment all I could see was light. I was dead. Death wasn't darkness and dust and nothingness like Jin thought. It was blinding light. Then I realized I could see the outline of a shape through the light, and it was making my eyes water. My lungs were burning for air, and I could feel blood and hard stone under my hand. I sucked in a panicked breath, a breath that felt like the first one in a long time. I bolted upright, rasping, coughing, sputtering. The light wasn't death, I realized. It was the sun, shining through the well into the palace vaults. And I wasn't dust in the desert. I was exactly where I had died. My hands were still sticky with my own blood, my face stained with tears. This was a whole lot more ordinary than death. I was alive. And then my eyes focused on the single thing that had changed. The room wasn't empty anymore. My father was there. Bahadur was crouched across from me, watching me with those unreadable blue eyes that matched mine perfectly. Like we were one person. Like I really belonged to him. He waited patiently as I found my footing back in the world of the living. Like I'd seen other parents watch their children take their first steps. "I'm not dead," I said. And I felt the words slip out like only the truth could.
"No,"
Bahadur agreed.
"Not anymore."
There was a sort of quiet then, as he let me settle into that notion, as he let me take another breath, realizing that for a few moments at least, my lungs had stayed still, that my frantic heartbeat had slowed to a stop, and for a moment I'd been gone. We'd both been gone. "Jin!" My eyes slid sideways frantically, looking for him. His figure was still slumped in a puddle of blood, not moving, not sitting up. I scrambled over to him, fumbling to push up his shirt, sticky with blood. But as I ran my hand across his skin, I could tell already that it was unbroken under the swath of blood. It was only then that I noticed my side didn't hurt anymore. I touched it, looking for the wound. But it wasn't there. More than that, the skin felt smooth. The scar. The one from when Rahim had shot me in Ilyaz, where the last piece of metal had been pulled from, where the pain radiated from every time I used my power. It was gone, too. I rested one hand on Jin's chest. It rose and fell under my palm, just slightly, but enough. Enough for me to know that he was not dead.
"He'll wake shortly,"
my father said from behind me. I twisted around so I could see him over my shoulder. He was still crouched. If I hadn't known better, he'd have looked like any desert man by a fire. Except he was too still. Like his muscles didn't feel any strain from sitting like that. He was not flesh and blood. Not human.
"He needs a little longer than you. He's not made quite the same as you are."
I wasn't entirely human either. I turned so that I was facing him fully, one leg sprawled in front of me, the other tucked under. One hand still on Jin's heart, like I had to hold on to him so he didn't disappear. "You saved us," I said. "How?" Only that was a stupid question. My father was among those who had made us, created humanity out of desert dust and fire. I had watched Zaheer lift Norsham's soul from his very body. It wouldn't take a whole lot to pull some torn pieces of humanity together, like stitching a tear in a rag doll.
"Why?"
I asked instead. He rubbed his hands together. It was the closest thing to a human gesture I had ever seen from a genie. A small tick, a moment to buy time to think.
"You asked me once if I remembered your mother. You seemed to believe I wouldn't. That I wouldn't care enough to. But you were wrong. I remember everything. I remember the day I tasted fear as I saw hundreds of Jean fall to the destroyer of worlds. And I remember the first woman I loved, who gave me my first child. And I remember watching that child die on the walls of Saramotai. And I remember that your mother had a small scar just above her lip that pulled when she smiled.
He touched his mouth, the exact place where it had been. I remembered that scar, even though I didn't remember her smiling much.
I remember everything, daughter of mine. Sometimes I think we feel things more deeply than mortals ever do.
I felt Jin's chest rise and fall below my hand. "You don't know what I feel," I said. He smiled.
"No,"
he granted, bowing his head gently.
"I don't. But I do feel as well."
We were silent for a moment as he let that hang there. I had only lived 17 years, and sometimes I didn't believe that I could contain everything I'd seen and lived and thought. No one ought to be made to contain an eternity.
I also remember the wish your mother made for you. What she asked for when I told her that she could have one thing she wanted for you.
What was it? I couldn't help it. I had been wondering what my mother had asked for since that day in the prisons with Shira. I had feared knowing, since Hala had told me of her own mother's selfish wish, and since Norsham had left his body.
I had hundreds of children before you, Amani. Their mothers wished for many things for them, for glory and wealth and joy. But your mother wished for none of that. Though she was desperate to get out of a town that would kill her one day, she never thought to ask for an escape, or for great riches to pave her way out with gold. Her wish was simple, that you should live.
He smiled then, sadly.
That you should live like she hadn't.
That I should live. It seemed such a small wish, when she could have asked for riches or power or a great destiny for me. But with my heart still beating when it had no right to, I understood it wasn't small at all.
It was a wish I hadn't heard for centuries. Not since my first daughter.
He meant Princess Hawa, my sister. We were separated by centuries, but she was my sister all the same. Daughter of another mother who wished for nothing but life for her daughter in the middle of a difficult war. But Hawa died.
Yes.
He dropped his head.
She did the same thing you did. Fell in love with someone who stood too close to death.
Bahadur's eyes flicked to Jin, and for a second I felt like an ordinary daughter whose father didn't approve of the boy she'd chosen to marry.
She tied her life to his, because she knew I would have to protect him. That if he died, she would die. And I did. I protected him in battle 100 times over. In the end, it was her I wasn't watching. My eyes were on him instead of her, when an arrow strayed from the battlefield. It was through her heart before I could do anything.
He paused.
I saved her 100 times, but I couldn't save her the last one.
But you saved me. I suddenly understood why he'd been the one to wield the knife. An arrow through the heart had killed Hawa on the spot. A wound to the stomach, though. That was slower. Slow enough for him to save me without anyone noticing. You didn't have to. It came out more ungrateful than I meant it to. I mean, I stumbled to catch up to my words. My mother asked for me to live. Jean thrived on technicalities, on gaps in wishes that they could wriggle through, obeying to the letter but no more. That promise was kept when I drew my first breath. You could have let me die any time after that if you'd wanted to.
If I'd wanted to.
Bahadur repeated knowingly.
Fathers will always do what they can to protect their children. I can do a great deal when I need to.
Well, I cleared my throat. I had no business crying when I was alive. I suppose bringing me back from the dead goes some of the way toward making up for 17 years of not doing a whole lot. Bahadur surprised me with a laugh. It was a deep and honest sound, and I liked it. And suddenly, stupidly, I wished I had more time to hear it, that I could have a father who would sit across from me and talk to me like this whenever I needed one. And just for a second, I felt that bone-deep wanting I hadn't felt in a long time. Since leaving Dustwalk, the one that came with longing for something you feared you might never have. The price I paid for being alive now was that after today, I might never be called daughter again. Jean couldn't be regular fathers after all. And the rest of them? I looked away quickly, worried he might read what I was thinking in my traitor eyes, like Jin had an uncanny ability to do. When they find out we're not dead, will they punish you? Bahadur brushed my words aside.
My kind do what they can to keep from crossing paths with yours. We hope the day that we all must will never come again. I hope that even more since your brother's death.
His eyes had a faraway look. He knew, I realized, what Norsham had done.
We fight separate wars, and now it is almost time for you to return to yours.
I could feel that he was right. The strange sense of suspended time that had hovered around us was fading. The world was leaking in around the edges. Under my hand, I felt Jin take a shuddering breath. His eyes snapped open, and he stared at me, blinded by the light pouring down the well of the vaults now. "We're not dead," I blurted out as he focused on me. "We're still alive, both of us." Jin searched my face, eyes wild, hand reaching up to me.
"Now would be a terrible time to start lying to me, bandit."
And then suddenly I was laughing and crying and kissing him as I helped him sit up. I turned around looking for my father, wanting to say something else. I wasn't sure what. But he was gone. There were only dust motes dancing in the light where he'd been crouched a moment earlier. I felt something like invisible hands tugging at my clothes. And I remembered what he'd said. It was time to go back to the fight. Chapter 46. We were the enemy at the gates of the city. Jin and I emerged onto the palace walls to find a real battle below us. Our people weren't on the defensive anymore. They were attacking. The Sultan's unnatural wall was gone, and the city ramparts were scattered with bronze bodies. Fallen Abdals, their spark vanished with Farish Day's release. The Sultan's soldiers, made of flesh and blood, were scrambling to get into position, reaching for their weapons. More rushed through empty streets toward the palace. We matched them in numbers, but they still had the higher ground. A scream from above drew both of our heads up. Iz flew overhead, releasing something from his claws. A bomb that struck the wall, exploding as it landed, taking stone and soldiers with it, but still not shaking the gates open. The rebellion needed a way in. I reached for the desert. And there was no pain. No struggle. My power flowed easily, like it was breathing a sigh of relief as it invaded my whole body. Involuntarily, I touched the smooth skin of my stomach. My father had healed that old wound, too, along with the new one. But it was more than the absence of the ache. For the first time ever, I felt my power like it was part of me, truly in my soul. Not a weapon at my fingertips, but like another heartbeat. I didn't so much as twitch my fingers as I grabbed full hold of the desert. Of my desert. I was the desert, and it would answer to me. I pulled with everything I had, raising the sand like the surge of the sea. It crashed into the eastern gate, splintering the stones, scattering soldiers, and opening the gates. I flooded the city with the rebellion. The streets turned into a battlefield as we raced down from the palace walls. We were unarmed except for my gift, and Jin hung behind me as we entered the fight. A soldier turned as we rounded a narrow corner, his gun rising to meet us. I moved faster than he did, the sand at his feet surging up around him, blinding him, choking him. Jin shifted past me. In one swift motion, he knocked the soldier in the face, grabbing the rifle out of his hands. Suddenly, there came a gunshot behind us. Jin and I turned as one, but the bullet hadn't been aimed at us. Sprawled on the street was a man in a soldier's uniform. Above him, in a window, was a girl in a gold calotte, her hair tied back off her face, a gun in her hands. She was shaking, and her eyes looked wide with the shock of what she'd just done. She'd just saved us. Her gaze met mine, and she gave me a small nod. I felt a surge of hope. The rebellion hadn't been extinguished inside the city while we were gone. We had to get back to the rest of the battle. Shahzad's plan had been to split the Sultan's soldiers up, divide them among the streets and alleyways, where numbers wouldn't matter, and we could push them back until the palace was in reach. We started to see the first signs of fighting on Red Reed Way, the thoroughfare that led through the city from west to east. Jin braced the rifle against his arm, taking aim even as I gathered the sand to me, guiding it together until it would arc like a blade against them. Together we fought through the fray like a knife through water. A dozen times a blade skimmed by my neck, close but not close enough. I saw a gun raised toward me, even as I brought the force of the desert down on the head of the soldier who wielded it. I should have been dead 100 times over. I wasn't. I felt like I was untouchable, like no bullets could hit me, no swords could strike me as we cut through the fight back to our own side. Then I saw her in the middle of the fight, dark braids swinging as her sword caught a man in the throat, before she dropped to her knees, slicing her blade along the back of another man's leg, downing him before she executed the killing blow, a knife to his neck. Shahzad had always been a force to be reckoned with, but watching her now, it was like she was barely human. She was a firestorm, and she would burn the Sultan's armies to the ground before she fell to them. When she spotted us in a lull in the fray, her face shifted. She grabbed me, pulling us toward her as we rounded a corner into a small impasse. Temporary shelter. "You're alive," she said, embracing me, even as Jin took up a position watching the streets around us, rifle at the ready. "I'm alive," I agreed. "Shahzad," I drew away from her. "Sam didn't..." Jin's rifle went off suddenly, cutting me off with a bang. A cry came from the street near us as the threat fell. "We can grieve the dead later." Shahzad shook her head quickly, guessing what I couldn't say, but her voice still sounded tight.
For now, I need a barricade across the Palace Road and Golder's Way to stop the soldiers retreating any farther than the river. The streets start to climb up there. We're lost if they gain higher ground. Can you get me that?
Yeah, I nodded, glancing quickly up above us. I think I can. But listen, Shahzad, I think you might be able to get reinforcements out on the streets. The people of Isman, we got them to riot once. If you can get them out in the street in Ahmed's name, then we outnumber the soldiers. I think we can end this.
We don't exactly have time to go door to door, Shahzad said as something exploded nearby. None of us flinched.
The Zungvox, I said. I reckon it's still in the Great Prayer House. I remembered seeing it, the wiring of Layla's invention curled around the inside of the dome like a snake, designed to allow one man to speak to the whole city, for the Sultan to threaten and control us. But we could use it another way. We could get the fallen Abdals to speak for us. Shahzad's eyes darted quickly in that way they did when she was working out a plan faster than any of us could.
All right, here's what we're going to do. Amani, you get me some barricades so we can keep fighting. And flag down the twins. Get them to move as many of the Abdals away from the walls and into the city as we can.
Yes, General. I saluted her. And for the first time, Shahzad didn't correct me on her title.
Jin, she called on him.
How about we get your brother to the Great Prayer House? It's about time the city knew he was alive.
We can manage that between the two of us.
He drew back into the shelter of the alley, reloading his gun.
Any sign of the Sultan?
He's on the battlements. She squinted up at the walls. But I haven't been able to pin him down. The orders are that if anyone gets the shot with the Sultan in their crosshairs, take it. Jin and Shahzad darted out of the shelter of the small street, back toward the fray, even as I turned to the nearest door. It took one burst of sand to shatter the locks, and then I pushed through. The ground floor of the house was empty, but as I pounded up the stairs, I could hear voices and small whimpers and cries from behind doors. But I wasn't here to hurt anyone. I just needed higher ground. I burst onto their roof. From up here, I could see the end of Golder's Way. Shahzad had made us all memorize the map of Isman. I could already feel the desert rising below my hands. The sand roared to life, answering my call as it surged in a storm up from the ground and slithered over Isman like some great swarm. I brought it crashing down at the place where Golder's Way met the river, building an immense blockade that no soldier would get past, stopping their escape short. I glanced eastward. I couldn't make out the palace road from here, the other point of retreat. I needed to move. I would lose precious time running back into the streets and fighting my way through, but it was too far to jump to the next roof. A thought struck me, and quickly I gathered a handful of sand toward me. I tightened the grains into a bridge that I arched to the next building. I ran across it without hesitation or fear that it might give out below me. And sure enough, not a grain of sand faltered as I dashed to the next building, and then the next after that. Finally, I could see my target, the end of the road where the ground sloped up. And sure enough, men in gold uniforms were moving toward it in something that looked like retreat. I cut them off, a wall of sand halting their escape. A little way off is sword above the city. My heart leapt as I grabbed at the sand, sending it up in a burst in his path, trying to get his attention. Iz veered violently to avoid it, but he saw me standing on the roof, waving my arms at him. He soared down toward me, turning into a boy and landing in front of me.
"You're alive," he grinned gleefully.
"For now," I said. I didn't have time to celebrate.
I told him quickly what we needed, and in another moment he was gone again, launching himself from the roof, a boy plunging down into the streets. A moment later, a huge blue rock rose back up, talons around one of the dead Abdals, their spark of genie fire gone with the release of Farish Day. But the Zungvox was Gamanek's technology, not Miraji magic. I had to pray it still worked. I caught sight of one of the Abdals lying on the street below me. I picked it up in a surge of sand, carrying it as far as I could, like a leaf on the wind, before I lost sight of it. Iz returned, plucking another Abdal off the wall, narrowly avoiding a bullet as he did. We worked as quickly as we could, Maz joining us after he noticed what we were doing, dispersing the Abdals as far and wide as we were able, scattering the Sultan's mouthpieces across the city. All the while, every passing moment that we didn't hear Ahmed speak, I repeated the same thing under my breath over and over again. Jin is alive. Chazad is alive. Ahmed is alive. Jin is alive. So long as I could say it out loud, it was true. So long as I could say it out loud, it meant they were still fighting their way through the crowd to the great prayer house. And then I heard it on the air. Ahmed's voice.
People of Isman.
I glanced west toward the prayer house, relief crushing my chest. He had made it to Layla's invention.
People of Miraji.
Ahmed's voice carried through the thousands of fallen Abdals.
There is fighting on your streets, but we do not come as invaders. Instead, we come as saviors. My father has ruled you with fear and with foreign steel. He has turned you over to enemies and hung your daughters and your sisters from his walls. He has killed his enemies in cold blood. He has killed his own family, his father and his sons alike. He has taken this country from you and enslaved you. We are here to return it to you. And if you would fight with us, for your freedom and for your country, we would welcome you.
It was as if the city shifted below me, not in some cataclysmic moving of the earth, as Zaheer had done in the mountains, but in some way that was purely human. The first beings might be all-powerful, but they had made us for the one thing that they could not do, to lay down our lives for what we believed in. It was the shift of an entire city, remembering what we were made for and standing up at once. And we stood up and fought. I wasn't conscious of time as the Battle of Isman raged on. Once I rejoined the fray, I stopped being one girl and melded with the rebellion like they were part of me. Moving obstacles out of the way, cutting a path to our enemy. From time to time, I heard Shazad's voice taking over the Zungvox, giving orders and guidance to a city that would fall to chaos without them. The fighting carried on for hours. Soldiers belonging to the Sultan clashed with our people. Then there came a scream from the sky. It was a hideous noise, and when I looked up, I saw a horrifying sight. Iz was writhing in the air high above us, thrashing amid flames. A lit arrow had caught his left wing. It was burning a violent mix of blue and red flames. As his feathers ignited, he screamed and plummeted his way toward the water to extinguish himself, trailing smoke behind him in a black train. Cries went up around me. From somewhere a few streets away, Maz shot into the air after his twin, shifting shapes frantically, from kestrel to rock to sparrow, looking for the place where Iz had landed, for a way to help his brother. Suddenly, it was as if I were watching it all from far away, as if only half of me was standing on the battlefield, and another half of me was standing in a green palace garden on a warm day, a lake full of birds in front of me, pulling back an arrow to strike one down. Except that I wasn't the one holding the bow now. I tracked the arc that the arrow must have come from. I was a good shot. I would find it. And sure enough, there he was. I saw the Sultan before he saw me. He was standing atop the wall, armored and dressed in uniform. I drew my gun and took aim. I knew it was impossible that he heard the click of my pistol, but his head turned my way. His gaze was hot, his stance cool. His head tilted ever so slightly as he drew his bow back, aiming for me now. His throat was just a little exposed. I could make that shot. I dropped my pistol, gathering the sand to me instead. I pulled my power backward, like a bullet in a gun. Like I had just one bullet left, and everything riding on it back in the pistol pit and dust walk. I saw his hand tense to release the arrow, even as the sand flew from my hand, heading for exposed skin, tearing toward my target with all the force of the desert behind it. I was a good shot. I didn't tend to miss. Chapter 47. The Rule of the Good Prince Ahmed. Once, in the desert country of Miraji, there was a prince who took his father's throne. Many people told many stories of that day. They said that the rebel Prince Ahmed fought a glorious battle against a cowardly opponent, his father, who hid behind his walls and let his soldiers fall in waves. They said that such was the Sultan's cruelty, the people turned on him as well, and that when the Sultan fell, his armies laid down their weapons at the prince's feet and surrendered to their new ruler's mercy gratefully. They said that when the rebel Prince Ahmed entered Isman, flowers rained from the windows, thrown by jubilant people grateful to be freed. His Demji's sister, Delilah, who had begun this fight with her birth, blew kisses to the men as they passed, happy to at last be returning home to the palace she had been forced to flee. And the blue-eyed bandit caught the flowers, weaving them into a crown for her prince as they advanced toward the palace. But those were stories. They would never tell the truth of what I remembered of that day. I remembered carnage on the streets, not carnations. The confusion after the Sultan fell, as men continued to fight. Good men, not wicked. Men who were just following orders given to them by a dead ruler. Men whose families would pour from their houses later to weep over their bodies. I knew how the Sultan fell, because I killed him. And I would have nightmares about that for months afterward. And sometimes his face would change to Hala's, sometimes to Shira's, or Sam's. But the storytellers would never know that. No one would know that except for Jin, who would wake in the night when I did, ready to fight, until he realized that the threat was in my mind and he couldn't defend me from it. Even if people had known the truth, they wouldn't have been interested in telling it. Flowers pouring from windows like falling stars made a better tale. The stories would never tell that after the Sultan fell, as we crossed the city, we were reminded of the cost of war with every single body, that as I pushed my way through the streets, I found Samir, a bullet through his chest. A kid from Dustwalk like me, who joined us in Sazi. It didn't matter how well we had trained him. War took lives and changed the ones that were left behind. The stories would remember that Iz survived his fall at the Sultan's hands, but not that his mangled, burned wing would turn to a mangled arm that would never fully heal, no matter what shape he took. He had a limp when he was on all fours, and his wing flapped hopelessly when he tried the shape of a bird. Maz stopped shifting into creatures that could fly altogether, because he didn't want to go somewhere his brother couldn't follow. I remembered how thick the air was with the smoke from funeral pyres that night. We burned as many bodies as we could, and we burned 4 empty pyres, too. The first one was for Sam. There was nothing left of him to burn, though we tore up the tiles of the palace looking all the same. But it was only ashes and collapsed Abdal bodies down there. If I hadn't known better, I might have thought he'd just slipped away through a wall after all, run off to some other adventure. Captain Westcroft told me that in Albus, they believed that when you died and were buried, your body blossomed into a tree or a field of flowers. A new life. So we covered Sam's funeral pyre in flowers, cut from the vines in the harem. The same kind Sam had plucked the first night I met him. We set a ring on Hala's empty pyre, gold for our lost golden girl. For our Demji of 1,000 faces, we used one of Shazad's kalats that Emin had liked to borrow. A crown for Shira, our dead Sultima. Bodies long lost because they died in the war, not this battle. Other ones. But we finally had the time to mourn them now that it was over. We burned the Sultan, too, and his sons stood next to the pyre as they ought to do, even if they were the reason he was dead. But that was the way. We were mortal. Sons were always meant to replace their fathers. The pyres burned until the moon wasn't visible through the smoke. I remembered finally collapsing into a bed that was familiar, because I had slept in it when I was a prisoner of the harem. I didn't know where else to go in the huge empty palace we had conquered. I awoke to the noise of the pillow moving under a new weight as Jin came and lay down. I shifted just enough to let his arms curl around me and pull me to him. "No man allowed in the harem," I remembered mumbling half asleep into his shoulder as he tried to get comfortable. When he laughed, I felt it through my whole body, and the joy at still being alive swelled so quickly through me all at once that I thought I might shatter.
"I think they make an exception for princes," he said into my ear before kissing me.
I remembered noticing that we were both still wearing our weapons and wondering how long it would take for the fight to really leave us, even now that we had won. But the stories were not made from our memories. Those were of interest only to us. The stories were made to tell a tale people wanted to hear, and people wanted to know that we had won and that all was well.
Ahmed became a legend across the desert within days. The resurrected prince, come back from the dead to save the city, the whole country.
The stories said that he had burned the foreign invaders in his path before taking on his father. But it was the Sultan who had done that, who had dispelled our would-be occupiers. He had helped us and made Miraji safe from foreign rule. The massacre of the Galen was the only reason we were able to seize the city at sunset without risk of losing it at dawn. But stories liked things to be simple. The Sultan was the villain. We were the heroes. And we had given the people of Miraji a new prince, kinder than his father. A new desert, free of occupation. A new dawn. I struggled to clasp the sun-shaped medallion around my neck as I walked, fumbling awkwardly with the chain for a few moments, before I finally had to stop moving. I was late. I leaned against a mosaic of some swans that stretched the length of this hallway through the palace, facing a line of arches that opened onto a placid-looking pond as I fumbled with a tiny hook at the back. I'd never owned a piece of jewelry before, and I would have happily carried on that way, if Ahmed hadn't given me this medallion. It marked me as one of the new Sultan's advisors on the temporary council he had formed to untangle the business of making a new country. It was symbolic, which was exactly why I was supposed to wear it. I tilted my head forward, making the hair Shazad had so artfully arranged fall over my face. It had grown out since it had been shorn in the palace all those months back.